바구베테 바수데바야
오노 바구베테 바수데바야
오노 바구베테 바수데바야 Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 2 Chapter 10 Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions Text 36 Sa vacha vacha kataya
vacha kataya
Bhagavan Brahma Rupa Drik Nama Rupa Kriya Dite Sarva-sakarma akarmaka para savacha vachakataya bhagavan brahma rupa dre nama rupa kriya date sarva karma karma ka Sa karma karma ka para. Sa vacha vacha kataya. Bhagavan Brahma Rupa Drik. Nama Rupa Kriya Date. Sa karma karma ka para. Vacha, by his forms and activities. Vacha kataya, by his transcendental qualities and entourage. Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. Brahma, absolute. Rupa Drik, by accepting visible forms. Nama, name. Rupa, form. Kriya, pastime. Dite, accepts. Sakarma, engaged in work. Akarmaka, without being affected. Para, transcendence. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. He, the personality of Godhead, manifests Himself in a transcendental form, being the subject of His transcendental name, quality, pastimes, entourage, and transcendental variegatedness. Although He is unaffected by all such activities, He appears to be so engaged. Purport. Whenever there is a need of material creation, the transcendental personality of Godhead accepts forms in the material world for creation, maintenance, and destruction. One should be intelligent enough to know his activities in truth and not be biased to conclude that he descends to the material world by accepting a form created by material nature. Any form accepted from the material nature has its affection for everything done in the material world. A conditioned soul who accepts the material form for undergoing a certain term of material activities is subjected to the law of the matter. But here in this verse is clearly stated that although the forms and activities of the Lord appear to be the same as those of a conditioned soul, they are supernatural and impossible for the conditioned soul. He, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always unaffected by such activities. In the Bhagavad Gita 4.14, the Lord says, Tamam karmani limpanti name kara pale spriha iti mam yo vijanati karma virna sabadite. The Lord is never affected by the activities which he apparently performs by his different incarnations and personalities, nor does he have any desire to achieve success by fruit of activities. The Lord is full by his different potencies of wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation, and thus he has no need, reason for physical exertion like the conditioned soul. Therefore, an intelligent person who can distinguish between the transcendental activities of the Lord, activities of the conditioned souls, is also not bound by the reactions of activities. The Lord as Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva conducts the three modes of material nature. From Vishnu is born Brahma, and from Brahma is born Shiva. Sometimes Brahma is a separated part of Vishnu, and sometimes Brahma is Vishnu himself. Thus Brahma creates the different species of life all over the universe, which means that the Lord creates the whole manifestation either by himself or through the agency with authorized deputies. Savacha vachakataya bhagavan brahma rupadrik nama rupa kriyadate sa karma karmaka para. He, the personality of Godhead, manifests himself in a transcendental form, being the subject of his transcendental name, quality, pastimes, entourage, and transcendental variegatedness. Although he is unaffected by such activities, he appears to be so engaged. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Vidaya Srimati Bhakti Vidanta Swami Tadamane Namaste Sarasatam Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvi Shesha Srinivadi Pasikatya Deva Siddharane. Here's a discussion about what's the difference between material and spiritual. The conditioned soul is very difficult to understand what's the difference between material and spiritual, because the only experience the conditioned soul has is material. Therefore, there's no basis of comparison. And even those who are aspiring transcendentalists, it's not always so easy. Because it appears that when Krishna comes, he's also coming in a material form, like we are. He's coming in a form, and actually, from our experience, whenever we think of form, we think of something material. And then if we talk about something spiritual, we only can equate it to something within our experience. Of course, the spiritualist can have some idea, but that idea may not be so clear. As a matter of fact, until we actually come to the stage of Krishna Prema, it's not completely clear. Of course, if we come to the stage of a bhava or a sakti or even ruchi, it's a lot clearer than it may be presently. But in our present state, we can try to understand what spiritual means. Now, it is said, etatsya karyam karanam tavidyate etatsamastya vyadikas chajrisyate parasya shaktir vividaira shuryate svabhavaki jnana bala priyacha. That the Supreme Lord has nothing to do. And here it's mentioned here also, nothing to do in the sense that he has nothing to do in the material world. Now in this material world, under the influence of this material body, which we take as our present deity, this body has many things that is telling us to do, both gross and subtle. Of course, we as spiritual souls, we only have one real interest. That is, we want to become blissful or happy. And under the present experience, there are certain things which will seemingly make us happier and seemingly make us less happy. Of course, knowledge is given to us even in the material world that what seems in the future will make us happy may not make us happy. And what we think may not make us happy will actually make us happy. One time, Srila Prabhupada was asked, what is the purpose of life? And Prabhupada gave the example, the answer, the purpose of life is enjoyment. So everyone has their desire to enjoy. But how to enjoy it, that's the question. Bhagavad Gita Krishna said, Sukham tvidanim trividam, shinu me varatar shiva abhyase ramate yatra dukantam chan gachati. Krishna is now going to explain the three different methods of enjoyment in the material world, by knowing which one can actually become ramate, one can actually become happy. And then he says, yattaragre vishami va parinami ritopamam tatsukam satyakam prokdam atma buddha prasadajam. So that which in the beginning may be bitter like poison, and at the end is just like nectar, and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. So that, of course, is a path by which we get out of the material concept of life. Material conception of life is based upon identifying with this body and trying to experience it. In other words, as long as we have consciousness, and that's forever, that's a long time, we're going to have to try to experience something. Presently, we're trying to experience this body. The soul, with his consciousness, is embracing the body as his worshipful Lord. And therefore, one who tries to get out of this concept, it may not be so pleasant. Because as soon as one tries to go through the austerities of not identifying with the body, then one will feel difficulty. It's called tapasya. There may be many reasons for that difficulty. The primary reason is that when the soul becomes more conscious of the body, when the soul becomes more conscious, then it's less pleasant. And also just the way the material world works. For instance, if we have to fast on a certain day, then it may seemingly be unpleasant. And certainly it is unpleasant. But that's just the way the material nature works. That's the situation of the body. Of course, it is not that if we don't fast that the body will suddenly become pleasant. It's always unpleasant. But to not fulfill the demands of the body, one becomes more acutely aware of what those demands are. And of course, if one tolerates the demands, then they go away after some time. And so at the beginning it may be poisonous, feeling those demands of the body, but when they go away it becomes just like nectar, because one is no longer disturbed by those demands. If we fulfill the demands, it's not that they go away, they simply become temporarily alleviated, and then they'll come up again to demand us more. Therefore, one who can tolerate the demands, then the result is that when the demands become, or go away, they become purified, especially by Krishna consciousness, then one actually becomes very happy. There's no more demand, which is the primary reason why we suffer. Now, simply by stopping demands, as the Prachetas say, yat pada pankaja palasa vilasya bhaktya kamashayam grahitam utkartayanti shanta tavanaraktam atayo yatayo piruda shudoganas tamarunam vajavasudevam. That the devotees, by concentrating their minds upon Krishna, which is that's our tapasya, Brahma, he was on the lotus flower, and he woke up, didn't know what was going on. So his primary desire was to find out what was going on. And therefore he climbed down from the lotus flower, and climbing down he heard the two words, ta-pa. Ta-pa comes from the Sparsha alphabet, and when they put them together it means heat up. And so he understood he was supposed to go through some austerity, and his austerity was to concentrate his mind. And that's our austerity also, trying to concentrate our scattered mind. And where is our mind scattered? It's scattered over all the different desires we have. How we're going to become happy in this material world, and how we're going to avoid unhappiness. So the idea is to concentrate the mind upon Krishna. So Brahma, he tried to concentrate his mind upon Krishna, and that also takes practice. So by concentrating his mind upon Krishna, then gradually he became more and more conscious of Krishna. because there's no difference between thinking of Krishna and associating with Krishna. And so if we concentrate our mind upon Krishna, then gradually we'll remember Krishna's form, then we'll feel his presence, we'll remember his qualities, then his pastimes, and the feeling will become more and more intense. Just like we may chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And even in the beginning we may not be completely in ecstasy, but a person who's Jai Shishi Radha Gopinath Ki Jai, that anyone who chants will see that there's something different about chanting Krishna's name than chanting the name of water, 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 water. Hey, water, hey, water, 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 water. That one can try that and see what is the result. The result is one will become thirsty, that's all, or disgusted. So even in the beginning, we'll notice that there's some difference in the quality of the name Krishna and the name of a material substance. Because the name Krishna, or Srimati Radharani, they'll remind us of Krishna. And when Krishna is there, everything becomes spiritualized by his presence. Now, as one advances further and can remember Krishna's name, then the quality also becomes different. Because if Krishna's name or Krishna's form is present in the mind, depending how intensely that form is present in the mind, then all of the material conceptions disappear. And similarly, as one remembers Krishna's qualities and then his pastimes, then the intensity of feeling of Krishna's presence increases and one's own feelings awaken towards Krishna. In other words, Krishna is rasa vaisaha, is all pleasure. And the more pleasure one feels, the more one understands how Krishna is actually the goal, the worshipable object. And then one will think, one can make the comparison, what is the pleasure I feel from this body, and what is the pleasure I feel from becoming conscious of Krishna? The more one can concentrate the mind upon Krishna, the more the one can see the distinction, how miserable the body is and how blissful Krishna is. Therefore, one will naturally change one's worshipful deity from this body or the subtle mind to Krishna and his associates, who are all equally blissful as Krishna. Then one can actually understand what's the difference between matter and spirit. Nor is it that we only have one worshipful deity, because this body is always changing. So at every moment we're getting a new worshipful deity, which somehow or another, by the mercy of the false ego, we're able inconceivably to identify ourselves with each successive worshipful object. Although we somehow or another, even if in the body of the worm who's in the stool, or we're in the body of a human being or a demigod, we take them all equally worshipable. We see everything it's inconceivable, somehow or another we're able to appreciate every circumstance we're under. But here it says we should not think Krishna's form is just another material form, because he has nothing to do, because he is unlimitedly blissful. Here in the material world, the concept is there is going to be a possibility of becoming happy in some material circumstance. If we could get as much money Bill Gates. We can get as much money as Bill Gates and be able to enjoy ourselves and satisfy the senses unlimitedly, then we'd be satisfied. Unfortunately, even if we have as much money as Bill Gates, or unlimited money, still, even if we try to supply the senses with unlimited sense gratification, they'll never be satisfied. Therefore, more of something doesn't mean better, necessarily. But of course, we may not appreciate that, but we can see it. We can try it out. See how much you can eat. If you had, just like the devotees, we're not poverty stricken. Although we may not have as much money as Bill Gates, but we have as much facility to eat as Bill Gates. So we can try and see. Eat as much as you can, and then try to eat a little bit more. Won't cost you anything. Not around here. and see if you become happier. And so what's the other thing? Unlimited sex life. So Bill Gates may be able to have more sex life, maybe not. We never know. But it's not that if one has more and more sex life, then one is necessarily satisfied. And what else can Bill Gates do that we can't do? He can sleep longer than we can. But we can also sleep. Doesn't matter how much money you have, many people can sleep, even if they're poor. Matter of fact, generally if you're poor, you can sleep longer. If you have too much money, you have too many things to worry about, you can't go to sleep. And then defending. When you don't have anything to defend, Bill Gates has a lot to defend, we have practically nothing to defend, except for our false ego, which may be as big as Bill Gates or may not. In any case, what is the difference in this material world between our particular circumstances and anyone else's in terms of happiness? In any case, somehow or another, we're hoping to create a situation in the future to become happy. What that situation is, that may not be so clear. Therefore, modern society's attempt to try and clarify it, clarify this for us. Buy this, go there, do this, and then you'll actually become happy. So people buy this, they go there, and they do this, and they don't become any happier. Ask people coming back from a vacation if they're any happier now after the vacation. Generally, the only thing that changes is that they're a lot poorer after the vacation, and after all the anxiety to enjoy, there are a lot more anxiety. Generally, I don't know, maybe I'm sure of you. It's possible after vacation, if you go to the right place at the right time, you can feel better. But even if you do, it's only temporary. Therefore, the question is, what is the arrangement that's possible that actually will feel satisfied? And how long would that arrangement last for? Even we get some knowledge, we understand, let us take the body of a demigod, which is supposed to be inconceivably more pleasant than this present body. Unfortunately, even the body of a demigod will still be an anxiety, because we'll have to die. Although, the amount of distress will be minimized, and the amount of pleasure will be maximized, but still there'll be a certain amount of distress because the situation is temporary. In any case, what is the difference between a demigod body and a worm body and a human body? It is simply that in the body of a demigod, the soul is able to experience more. In other words, there is in the body of a demigod, one is more Krishna conscious, that's all. And the body of a worm, one is less Krishna conscious. And here, we are in the middle, where we have the possibility of becoming Krishna conscious. Krishna conscious doesn't mean that, for instance, the demigods are necessarily always thinking about Krishna, because if they're always thinking about Krishna, they probably would have went back to the spiritual world. It just means that their coverings are less. I mean, even one who's in the Brahman effulgence, they're also conscious of Krishna, but they're conscious of Krishna impersonally, his effulgence. But that's also Krishna consciousness. So the less we're covered by the material energy, the more we become blissful. So in the body of a demigod, one is less covered. In this body, we're more covered. In the body of an earthworm, it's quite covered. But even in this lifetime, we can become uncovered and therefore actually become happier. So the difference between material and spiritual is simply the amount of covering over the spiritual soul. When the soul is uncovered, then everything is seen as spiritual. And when the soul is covered by his enemies, especially lust and anger and greed, then everything appears to be material. And of course, when Krishna comes here, he has nothing to achieve. If you already own everything, and you're controlling everything, in the material world at least, then what is there left to achieve? So Krishna says, Natasya karyam karanam chavidyate. There's nothing for Krishna to achieve, and because Nitasya karyam karnam chavidite nitasamascha vyadikascha drishyate. No one is seen to be equal to or greater than Krishna. Because Krishna is unlimitedly everything. And everything is Krishna. But how does the material world go on? Parasya shaktir vividaiva shriyate. Krishna has unlimited energies, and one of the energies is this material energy. Of course, we may not have any real idea what the material energy is. We only see the material energy according to our present experience, which is very limited. We have no real idea of how the material energy works, or how it's working under Krishna's direction, or what our influence in the material energy is. Of course, if we read the Bhagavad Gita, we'll find out that our influence is mostly desiring, and these inconceivable energies are arranged in many different ways. In present society, we become dull. As a matter of fact, the more one becomes into the mode of ignorance, the more one becomes dull, and one thinks one can conceive of all these energies. We think we've understood how the sun is just floating, this big ball of fire. Of course, around here you don't have to worry too much about that. But sometimes there is a clear day. We see this big ball of fire just rising up and just moving across the horizon and going down. It's a big deal. Anyone can do that. And then the moon comes up and we look at it. No appreciation of what's behind the sun and the moon. Our consciousness is covered by the idea, no reason to appreciate. It's all mechanical. It's just happening, like everything else. In America, for instance, after this disaster that happened, one of the preachers said the disaster happened because of the sinful activities within America. That because of the abortions and of course he didn't mention meat eating, because I'm sure he's a meat eater himself, but the sins like homosexuality and prostitution and whatever else they were talking about. He said, that's why this happened. And everyone, such a protest. Everyone said, oh, this person's a demon. He has no feelings. He's hurt everyone's feelings, all the disaster victims. And so he had to withdraw it immediately. Because he almost concluded that God actually has a hand in things. That it's not by accident that something happens. That innocent, why bad things happen to good people. Because actually people don't like God. Even the religious people don't like him. Or they want to make him powerless. That the old man, you know, he would have liked to stop the planes, but, you know, he was asleep. They can't conceive of how people are actually getting that Krishna's parashya shaktiri vividaiva shuyate. Nothing happens without Krishna's sanction. Of course, it would be foolish to conclude that that means that it does, you know, the terrorists or anyone else are not responsible for what they're doing. No, if people had a certain karma, then Krishna would arrange it somehow or another, but the terrorists, whoever else does some sinful activity, they become responsible for what they're doing. If they would have somehow or another come in contact with the devotees and started to chant Hare Krishna and given up their activities and didn't do their terroristic activities, it's not that Krishna wouldn't arrange it in a different way, whatever these people's karma was. But the terrorists, they wouldn't have been held responsible. They wouldn't have to get the future sinful reactions of what they're doing. So the material world is not working very simply, it's working very complicated under Krishna's arrangement, and the energies are inconceivable. Here in this material world, under our present experience, we think we know everything. But actually, as one goes into the higher planetary systems, then one gets mystic powers. As one becomes purified, just by one's willing, so many things can happen. There was one magician. He had some mystic powers. This is like some years ago. And all these evolutionists, they test him. Because at that time evolution was coming. All the scientists. So sometimes he'd walk out his hotel window and just float in the air. And they'd see it. All these scientists would come around, they'd see it. They'd test all his, sometimes he'd materialize things. But in spite of all that, no one would believe it. In spite of all these scientists witnessing these things, no one would believe it because we don't want to believe it. Not within our scope to believe these things. So on this planet we have a certain conception, a certain understanding of how the laws of material nature work, but it's not actually reality. It's just what we're conceiving of. And those who are on the higher planetary systems, they have much more closer understanding of how the material nature works, but it's all very inconceivable. Maybe Brahma knows, maybe Shiva knows, especially Shiva, because they're more in touch. But actually the only person who really knows is Krishna. Because the material nature also works inconceivably because it works under Krishna's inconceivable energies. And that's the material nature. But ultimately it works according to Krishna. And therefore, as we've heard, that Krishna can spiritualize material energy also. Just like if one puts an iron to the fire, it becomes hotter and hotter and hotter. And therefore it takes on all the qualities that fire has. So what we think is just ordinary material energy comes in the form of the deity, full of all the transcendental potencies of the Lord. But that's inconceivable. I mean, we can't even conceive of what's going on in the universe. We can't even conceive of a person walking out their hotel window and just floating around, walking around in the space. We can't even conceive of things that for other people are completely ordinary. So what to speak of the fact that God can actually manifest himself in the material world in the seeming what we think is material energy and be completely spiritual. This is called Parashya Shakya Vividaiva Shriyate Svabhavaki Jnana Bala Kriyata Cha. And it's not a big thing for Krishna. It is not that he has to sit at a drawing board for 15 years and figure out how to do it. He already knows how to do everything. And for ourselves, working in the material world, under the material energy, we just get what we deserve. So the primary thing that we're dealing with in the material energy is our false ego, our very limited conception of what reality is, due to our identification with our present mind and senses and intelligence. We actually think that this is reality. And if we become conscious of Krishna, then we'll see how little of reality we actually can understand or actually appreciate or experience. So that's basically the difference. Krishna is spiritual, and Krishna's energies are all spiritual, and presently our limited conception, our limited experience, that's called material. So it says, and how can we Brahmarpanam Brahmahaivir, or actually before that it says, Gata Sangasya Muktasya Jnanavasti to Cheta Saha Yajya Charata Karma Samagram Praviliyate. The work of a person who is unattached to the modes of material nature and is situated in transcendence merges into the work of a person who is unattached to the modes of material nature Gata Sangasi Muktasya Jnanavasti and who is situated in transcendental knowledge merges entirely into transcendence. Brahmarpanam, Brahmahayavir, Brahmagno, Brahmahutam, Brahmaiva, Tena Gantavyam, Brahma Karma, Samadhina. And Prabhupada's translation is a little bit different from the Sanskrit, but it has the idea there. That a person is sure to reach the spiritual kingdom because of their full contribution to spiritual activities, in which the result is absolute, and the consummation is absolute, and the things which are offered are of the same spiritual nature. In other words, if we really want to find out what's the difference between matter and spirit, then we have to concentrate on Krishna. It's only in meditation on Krishna that we become Krishna-eyes. And that meditation begins with service to Krishna, with his present body, following Krishna's instructions, engaging in his service. Then we become eligible to meditate upon Krishna. And the more consistently and deeply we're able to concentrate upon Krishna with devotional feelings, then the more everything becomes spiritualized. In other words, we become spiritualized. Our consciousness becomes spiritualized. And then we can understand what is spirit. then we can understand what is the difference between matter and spirit. Actually, it's just a difference in consciousness. It is nothing really has to change. It is not that we have to organize the Sankirtan movement to make the world spiritual. As Prabhupada once said, one time there was at an airport, one devotee said, "Srila Prabhupada, wouldn't it be nice if we had this airport?" Prabhupada said, "We already own the airport. We already have, Krishna owns everything. Everything is already spiritual. Everything is already perfect because it's going on under Krishna's direction. Therefore, Krishna says, Vasudeva Sarvamiti, that the learned person realizes everything is perfect already because everything is Krishna's energies and everything goes on under Krishna's direction. The only thing that's not perfect is that people think that there's something other than Krishna. That's the only problem in the material world. Now we're hearing how they're going to fight the terrorists, they're going to solve the problem. They're not going to solve any problem. They're going to just create more problems. The only solution is Krishna consciousness. And of course, if we stood up and we told people, the only solution is Krishna consciousness. Of course they do, and now in America, for instance, they're praying more. You know, "Dear Lord, please don't send more terrorists." "Send us, you know, some this or that, but don't keep the terrorists, you know, sir. You can keep them." So they're praying for something. Now they're praying, you know, "Dear Lord." So at least they're praying to God. There's some desire that God protects them. So that's certainly pious. But the real prayer should be, "My dear Lord, please make me God conscious so my creation, I won't create any more terrorists." Because they're praying for so many things. Praying is very nice, and that's certainly, but even the terrorists, they're also praying. They're praying harder. That's why Krishna's giving them the more intelligence. Each one of them, they're praying to God very strongly, "My dear Lord, please empower me to kill the other one." So Krishna, because he's answering their prayers, that's all. So how good that is, I don't know. But at least Krishna is somewhat in the center of the whole thing. So maybe one day they'll wake up and see and understand that actually we're just wasting our time. Why don't we just pray to Krishna and become spiritualized? Because after all these people they're thinking one thing. The terrorists are thinking they're going to heaven after they do something. But it's all ignorance. They don't realize, you know, what they're going to get. And the people who were killed, of course, it's not, we can say it's unfortunate. Certainly it's unfortunate. What's really unfortunate is that if they're not Krishna conscious, at the time of death, what have they accomplished in this lifetime? So in other words, the only thing really worthy of being accomplished is somehow or another to become Krishna conscious, to become God conscious. And when one becomes God conscious, then one can actually begin to understand what the real goal of happiness is. What is the real means of getting happiness? Why were these people working in this building to become happy? But the only solution to becoming happy is to become Krishna conscious. If there are no terrorists, or if there are terrorists, if there's this or that, we won't actually become happy. The only thing that will make us happy is to become conscious of Krishna. And therefore, that is the real solution to all these different problems. And that is the difference between matter and spirit. That's the difference between good and bad. Matter means to become conscious of material energy, which is always painful, and spirit means to become conscious of Krishna, which is always blissful. So in any circumstance, one can become conscious of Krishna, and in any circumstance in the material world, one could be in Maya also. Therefore, our understanding is that we have to understand who is Krishna, how Krishna manifests himself, how we can become conscious of him, And if we become conscious of Him, then our life becomes perfect in any circumstance. And if we understand that, then we won't be so much anxious to change everyone's life around, in one sense. We'll simply be anxious to give people consciousness of Krishna. Then we'll see if people are working towards becoming conscious of Krishna, their life is perfect. And if we're doing it, our life is perfect. And if they're not doing it, then they're just wasting their time. Shrava eva hi kevalam. That's the difference between matter and spirit. In spirit, there's no waste of time. And in matter, in material consciousness, one is simply wasting their time. Shuli nichu. Punat punas charvita charvanana. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Oh, you mean the terrorists? Or probably most of the people. Yeah, well, just imagine having to work 10 hours a day. You're practicing in hell anyhow, or 15 hours a day. It's not much of a difference. All those people anxiously trying to make money. For what? Because they're only going to get one chapati or couple of pieces of bread a day. They already have ulcers and they're suffering like anything. You know, and anxiety how to make money, where to spend it. And then the plane hits them and, you know, actually, in one sense, if one was going to go to a lower species of life, then if one dies sooner, then one won't become so degraded. So there are many ways of looking at it, but of course if we say like that, people will become very disturbed. People think we're completely insensitive, we have no feelings towards people, you know, we're cold and heartless, and, you know, that's the result of becoming a follower of this Krishna. The laws of material nature are very difficult to understand, they're very complicated. Therefore, in one sense, the most important thing is to utilize every circumstance and try and make it favorable so people will become Krishna conscious. So by showing some compassion, which the devotee is compassionate, he's compassionate both for the terrorists and for the, you know, people who got killed, he's compassionate because he knows their destination is not so pleasant. Therefore, showing a little compassion, and then if people think, oh, these Krishnas are nice, you know, they're human beings, that's nice. People hardly think we're human. Some people at least. So people can understand that we are compassionate and show some feeling, that's better than just telling people, analyzing it, that, you know, terrorists did them a good deal because they were going to go to hell anyhow. They say they're only going to go to a dark region of hell rather than the darkest. Now people won't be able to relate with that and understand it. If it's too, people will think we're actually cruel and heartless. So certainly it's not the time to praise the terrorists. I mean, nor is it the time to become sentimental either, to think, oh, this, you know, somehow or another, you know, this happened to all these innocent people. Nothing happens to innocent people. But more horrible things will happen in the future unless people actually become Krishna conscious. So somehow or another we have to use our brains for ourselves become conscious of Krishna. Because as we can see, we're thinking, oh, we're in the Western world, we're not in Afghanistan, we're not in some horrible place, like we're, you know, in Africa, and people aren't running after us with spears, trying to put us in a pot and eat us. But now there's a little awakening that it's not the Kali Yuga so far away that we're in a nice place and no one can hurt us here and everything's safe. And I just pulled it blanket over my head and everything's unprotected. Doesn't work like that. You know, you go to New York, who knows, you know, what's the next thing that's going to happen. After bombing Afghanistan or going after the terrorists, it's not that the terrorists will go away. And say, oh, these Americans or these Europeans, they're so strong, we don't want to hurt them anymore. No, then that's when the terrorists will really begin. I mean, if these people are willing, they're so fanatical to kill themselves just to get the satisfaction of having to kill so many other people, then, you know, it's just the beginning. And we, you know, it's not that we're all safe and protected. We don't really have to chant Hare Krishna. We're just doing it out of our causeless mercy. No, it's a wake-up call for all of us, too, that to get out of Kali Yuga as quickly as possible. It's only 5,000 years into Kali Yuga. So, and for the last 100 years, or 50 years, how rapidly it's advanced. So we're around here, we take our next birth in Kali Yuga, if we forgot our japa beads, then who knows what's going to happen to us. And I'm sure it's pretty shocking to see it. You know, you look at your window and you see an airplane heading for you. But that's not like it's not like the end of the road. There'll be even more shocking things happening. And if you're walking down the street, you see all these little pygmies, you know, rushing after you to eat. That's also quite shocking. So the shocks haven't stopped. So therefore we should concentrate our minds more upon Krishna. So whatever our karma is, it's not that it's all by accident. You know, it's by accident, we'll walk down the street and by accident, so some plane will pull out of the sky and his head is in the head. No, we don't know how many sinful reactions we have stored up in our heart. What we, you know, materially speaking, what we have in store for us in this material world. But if we actually become conscious of Krishna, enter into the spiritual platform of consciousness, no matter what's happening to us externally will be blissful. And of course, if one is deeply absorbed in Krishna consciousness, all the sinful reactions are taken away. And then Krishna is really in control of whatever happens to us. He'll make all the arrangements. In any case, Krishna consciousness is so auspicious, and Krishna consciousness means to focus the mind upon Krishna. Not to mechanically go, simply, I mean, mechanically going through the process is good. Just like praying to Krishna is good, but it's not good enough. It wasn't good enough for Muslims to pray to Allah and for the Christians to pray to Jehovah to protect them. You know, there was some benefit by praying to him, but obviously it wasn't good enough. So it's not good enough either for us that mechanically goes through the process. We have to go on towards the goal of actually absorbing the mind of Krishna. And that way, whatever our circumstances are, we'll be unaffected by them. We're less and less, progressively less and less affected by our circumstances and more affected by Krishna. So that even in the greatest difficulty, punaha vichalyate, one will not be disturbed. I mean, there were devotees in New York there. The whole thing affected everyone. If you look at the pictures, you know, there was this huge ball of smoke. Went over all of New York, and I'm sure there are many people who are like devotees in New York. Everyone got affected by it. And we'll all be affected. Anyone who flies into New York now will be affected. We're all affected by it. But how much we're affected, really affected by it, will be determined by how conscious we are of Krishna. Is that right? Anything else? Yes. Jewish people, I mean, they said 5 million Jewish people died, and there were like, what, 70, 80, 100 million other people died. So it wasn't that. Only one group of people got the reaction. A lot of people got reactions for, yeah, it's all reactions, it's karmic reactions. But it's not that only they got karmic reactions. We're all getting karmic reactions. As much as we have a tendency to try to control the material world and enjoy it, it's getting reactions for it. It may be more and less, but it's there for all of us in this material world. And we can't escape it unless we find something, you know, superior. Unless we actually desire to, instead of control this material world, unless we desire to serve Krishna and to enjoy, unless we desire to love Krishna, then there's no escaping from this material existence. Anything else? Yes. No, it physically changes. Even our perception has some result. But it becomes spiritualized. It changes because our consciousness changes. What do you mean by physically change? What do you mean by quality? I mean, after all, we're the only real difference it makes to us. What the quality is our experience of it. You know, gold doesn't change into silver, or silver into gold when it becomes spiritualized. It remains the same, but our experience is different. And everyone's experience of that. If it becomes, feels like you put an iron into the fire, it becomes hot like the fire. And anyone who touches it will become burnt. It's not that only the person who, you know, put it into the fire will get burnt. Everyone else, it won't really make any difference. So of course, if something becomes spiritualized, everything becomes affected by it. Everyone will become affected by it. They'll become spiritual if they come in contact with it. Their experience will be different. They'll change their consciousness to a higher consciousness. Yeah, or the deity. I mean, obviously, you know, you don't see many statues smiling at you and playing on flutes, blissfully smiling at you. So obviously something must have happened. Well, Prabhupada also. Prabhupada was, wherever he was the spiritual world. Because he was on the transcendental platform. Therefore, he's always thinking of Krishna, and therefore the whole spiritual world was here. Krishna, his associates, his name form. Therefore, according to our receptivity, I mean, if one wants to be Maya, after all, Krishna walked into the arena, and everyone saw him differently, according to what they want, how they wanted to see him. So it wasn't even God himself is present. We see him according to the way we want to see him. But those who were a little receptive, their experience was also there. So it's not like everything is mechanical. It depends upon us. What do you think? What do you mean by changes? I mean, by mystic power, you can make bell metal into gold. You can change it by mystic power. Spiritually, there's no real need for changing bell metal into gold. But it becomes, if it's offered to Krishna, then it becomes connected with Krishna, and it'll change our consciousness. Whether it's the same thing, but just our consciousness is changing? No, it becomes different. It becomes spiritualized. It becomes full of the internal energy of Krishna. So that's quite a difference. That's the only real important difference. You don't understand what I'm talking about? Well, try and think about the analogy of the iron and the fire. It's an iron, it's fire, you put the iron in fire, it becomes just like fire. So if something becomes spiritualized, it becomes hot spiritually, and if you touch it, you become spiritualized. Which means you become purified, and you become more conscious of Krishna. Lust, anger, and greed, which is subtle, they become purified. And therefore one becomes clear in one's consciousness. And then one can much more easily think of Krishna. So there's a difference. Just like there's a difference between ordinary food and prasadam, because it's offered to Krishna. But if we're in material consciousness, we may not even notice the difference. So our consciousness has a big factor too. If we're receptive to it, then we'll become purified. If we're not so receptive, we may not be very purified by it. because we're dealing with lust, anger, and greed. Just like one may eat prasadam, and if one is very lusty, angry, and greedy, then the prasadam may have some effect, but, I mean, when we're taking the prasadam, but the effect will also increasing our material consciousness at the same time. So the effect will be there, but it'll be minimal. But if we eat it with great devotion, great receptivity, then we'll actually become very much aware of it. We'll become spiritualized by it. So the primary thing we're looking at is changing our consciousness. Not simply changing the material energy around, trying to see what the difference is. Is that clear? Clearer. Yeah, we're dealing with consciousness primarily. Not that if, you know, the altar was mad at, you know, if we offer something to Krishna and the altar becomes mad out of gold, it's going to make a big difference. It won't make a big difference. If we offer something, we actually see Krishna face to face, you know, that will make a big difference. Or if we see something in relation to Krishna, just like when Akrura saw Krishna's footprints, then he fell down on the ground in ecstasy and started to roll on the ground. It wasn't that the footprints, you know, were that much different. He could have probably drawn footprints similar. But because he saw it in relation to Krishna in devotion, therefore he started to roll on the ground in ecstasy. Of course the footprints are different because Krishna was there. But because he saw them with devotion, therefore he got the full effect of them. Similarly, we can look at the sun. If we see it in relation to Krishna, we'll get the full effect, because after all it was Krishna, either directly or indirectly, he put it there. We can also get the full effect if we see the sun with devotion moving through the sky. Therefore, that would be a big difference. It's already spiritual, but because we're material, therefore we think that this has, you know, therefore we think it's material. In any case, things directly connected to Krishna get the same potency as Krishna has. So we connect the sun with Krishna, and Krishna will be there, and will become spiritualized too. Anyway, it's not so easy to understand. Anything else? Nor have I completely realized it, so I may not be able to explain it completely clearly even. Grantharaya Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande.